The Radio Iowa Podcast. I'm Stella Schaffer. What a difference a weekend makes. Iowans swept and shoveled and plowed, and the blizzard of the past week released a bit of its grip. While workers continued reconnecting power customers, the kind of people who take advantage of anything may have moved in. Alliant Energy spokesman Ryan Stensland says there have been reports of people knocking on doors and ordering people to leave their homes and stay out for a week until repairs are done. Anytime you wonder about a line worker or somebody else in your neighborhood, he says you should know there's no doubt.
They will have some type of official identification, that company identification, like a security ID or additional identification information that clearly marks that they are Alliant Energy employees or contract employees that we're working with on this storm restoration effort.
Some of those workers with their trucks parked alongside the roads were telling Stensland that motorists don't slow down when they go zooming down the roadway.
We have crew members that are going across those roads trying to string lines, trying to move poles, those types of things. There's a lot of activity out there, and we would ask that if you can, to please stay away from those areas. But secondly, if you have to drive through on that road, our employees will be very accommodating. If you give them just a minute to finish up what they were working on, they will definitely get out of your way.
On Sunday, we proved him right when a utility worker was hurt by a speeding motorist and rushed to a Cedar Falls hospital. State climatologist Harry Hilliker says the latest storms that dumped snow and ice on Iowa rank right up there with some of the worst in history.
The last similar storm would have been January 26th of 1996. That particular storm had similar snowfall amounts, although it was centered further east.
Our perennial weather analyst says there were some differences, too, from the last historically awful winter storm.
Higher winds, certainly much more persistent winds than was the case in 96, and therefore causing more drifting and problems after the snow had actually ended, as far as that continued blowing snow and keeping roads closed and so forth. The one ingredient somewhat lacking, though, from this last storm was bitterly cold air. Did have a few places dropping down below zero by Sunday morning when things finally cleared off.
Hilliker says this was the most widespread ice storm he could remember, and says some areas got as much as 20 inches of snow. You'll remember these storms ended with Governor Chet Culver declaring all 99 counties disaster areas. The DOT's Dina Grayfisher says crews were out all weekend.
The melting sure will help, but it's going to take a while in some of these areas where there are large drifts.
And after a few more days, it was turning into a different kind of nightmare for workers like Woodbury County Superintendent of Roads Roger Milligan. He said his crews hadn't finished opening some of the roads blocked by snow.
The school buses are going to have to just run the hard surface roads and pick up people at the blacktop because there's no way that we can get all the snow off the road between now and when it's supposed to be 60 degrees.
With some of the rural roads still impassable, Milligan said he'd rather see the weather stay around freezing.
33 or 34 in the daytime and froze down to 10 at night. That way you'd have opportunity to repair some of the wet, muddy areas. It'd freeze back up and you could gravel on top of them.
But he wasn't getting that wish. Gravel roads melted before they could be plowed, a muddy mess in waiting. And temperatures are forecast to warm from now through the middle of next week. Low-income Iowans who had expenses, unexpected expenses, like a hotel bill because of the long power outage, can apply for a state grant. Department of Human Services Director Kevin Concannon says the applicants will have to turn up receipts for storm-related expenses that weren't covered by insurance.
We reimburse Iowans for damage incurred to items that they already own that need to be repaired or replaced. Some examples of that, a water heater, clothing that was damaged, minor repairs to a dwelling, or if they had to seek temporary housing. We had, you know, nearly 100,000 homes without power for extended periods of time. If they had to go to a hotel or motel, we can reimburse up to $50 per day.
As appropriations go, it wasn't a big one. Concannon said the grants are intended for the most needy families who can't afford the extra costs from the storm's destruction. For example, they can't cover the purchase or rent of a generator, but could be used to pay the electrician who reconnects your house to the electrical grid. The ice storms and blizzards have some folks thinking ahead to warmer weather. So is Iowa Department of Natural Resources Parks Bureau Chief Kevin Skadronsky. He says people are already booking campsites.
Campers are able to reserve campsites 3 months in advance. So believe it or not, toward the end of February and the beginning of March is, in fact, 3 months before Memorial Day weekend. So we have several campers already making plans and reserving their sites for Memorial Day weekend.
It says only half the campsites are available for reservations. The rest, first come, first serve. So what's in your pantry? Keith Hansen, outreach coordinator at the Center for Biopreparedness Education, says Iowans should stock up on the basics.
Some extra water, extra food, a flashlight with batteries or something with a hand crank, an emergency radio, all those types of things that you would have in place for any type of disaster.
And he's talking about some other kind of emergency, like a big flu outbreak. Hansen says while avian influenza may not be on our radar, we should all be prepared for the worst.
There really isn't a question about whether we will have another pandemic. Historically, this is what Mother Nature does. The questions we have about a pandemic are how severe and when a pandemic will hit, not whether it will hit.
Hansen suggested Iowans stock up on supplies like canned fruits, vegetables, meat, cereal, soup, bottled water. If you didn't learn that yet this month. Former presidential candidate and former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack has criticized polls that showed him running well behind other candidates in the race for the White House. Vilsack, a Democrat who ended his campaign on February 23rd, says none of the polls in Iowa reflected the level of support he thinks he had. Drake University political science professor Dennis Goldford says polls aren't perfect, but he doesn't think they're too bad. Goldford does a little math of his own using some of the data Vilsack himself boasted about.
The governor kept saying that he had commitments from 3,000 Iowans to caucus for him next January. And on the one hand, that's impressive, but on the other hand, if you figure that there'll probably be 100 to 120,000 Democrats caucusing next January, that's 3% or less.
Goldford concludes Vilsack was caught in the catch-22 of electoral politics, which requires candidates to raise money to show they're viable.
But to demonstrate political viability, you have to raise money. And potential donors, I think, people who want to put their money on a potentially winning horse, are the ones perhaps Governor Vilsack should be concerned about, because they are the ones most likely who looked at the polling data and the polling information and said, well, we may like the guy or think he's solid material, but he just doesn't look as though he's got the strength among the voters, among the Democrats, to go all the way.
Vilsack said this week that for as long as he lives, he'll believe he would have won the Iowa caucuses if he had stayed in the race. Vilsack taped an exit interview with State House reporters to air on Iowa Public Television at the end of the week. Iowa Senator Tom Harkin was photographed at a private fundraiser in Boston earlier this week with Illinois Senator Barack Obama, a Democratic presidential candidate. Harkin had been supporting former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack for president. Vilsack's dropped out. Harkin says his appearance with Obama was coincidence, not an endorsement.
I happened to be at a fundraising event for myself in Boston, and it happened to be in the same building on the same floor down the hall from where Barack Obama was having his event. And Barack just simply found out I was down the hall and came down to stick his head in my door, so to speak, and say hi to the people who were there. And, of course, cameras were clicking and took pictures, and that's all there was to it.
Harkin says he's focused on his own re-election in 2008, and as for the presidency, he says he doesn't have a horse in that race. Two other presidential candidates were in Iowa over the weekend. New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson, a Democrat, called himself a grassroots candidate who will not have the resources that others, like Hillary Clinton, will have.
The voters decide this race. There's this emphasis out of Washington, D.C. that the way you become president is you raise a lot of money or you're a rock star. I'm neither. But I'm going to be respectable in raising money, and I'm going to go to the people directly on issues.
Former Wisconsin Governor Tommy Thompson, a Republican presidential candidate, was also back in Iowa this weekend, sounding a similar anti-Washington theme.
I mean, they hate each other out there. It's terrible. I mean, Democrats hate Republicans, Republicans hate Democrats, and everybody hates everybody. And all they want to do is get on the 6 o'clock news, and they don't give a damn for what gets done.
Thompson, who calls himself a moderate conservative, has said he intends to make weekly visits to Iowa in hopes of building support for the Iowa caucuses next January. On Monday morning, a third candidate arrived. Hillary Clinton toured the Corn Genetics Facility at Pioneer Hybrid just after doing an exclusive interview with Radio Iowa's O.K. Henderson.
Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton suggests the federal government should spend $50 billion on projects that help reach the goals of reducing America's dependence on foreign foreign oil and reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Clinton argues a federal strategic energy fund would help more rapidly deploy already existing technology and accelerate the production of ethanol from the entire corn plant. Clinton also wants a new federal agency to bring together the best minds in the country to focus solely on energy innovations. Pioneer just received a grant from the U.S. Department of Energy to finance some of the company's research into cellulosic ethanol. Clinton says that's the kind of action the federal government should be taking.
It's just that I believe we have to do much more than what the Bush administration is willing to do.
Radio Iowa, I'm O.K. Henderson.
They talked, too, about campaigning with Bill Clinton and being in the spot of a candidate. Hillary Clinton says making public appearances with her husband, the former president, at her side, and having him campaign on her behalf will be a rarity on the campaign trail.
But it'll happen when it can because, you know, I love seeing him. I love having him with me. And it is what we've done together for so many years.
Senator Clinton campaigned solo in Iowa, but the Clintons appeared as a couple at a civil rights ceremony in Selma on Sunday.
We were both invited, I to participate, and he to receive the Voting Rights Hall of Fame honor. And originally, he didn't know whether he could rearrange his schedule, but it meant a lot to him that they were honoring him and former President Johnson. And so it worked out for us to be there together, and I'm really glad it did.
Critics of the Clintons questioned the last-minute scheduling of the couple's Sunday appearance in Selma, where Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama had been billed for weeks as a keynote speaker. Senator Clinton swept aside questions about the timing.
You know, it was in the queue for invitations, and, you know, we kind of sorted all the requests out, and I really wanted to do it, and we were able to make it possible.
Bill Clinton's last appearance in Iowa was in October. He was keynote speaker at the Iowa Democratic Party's fall fundraiser. At the time, the former president downplayed his wife's potential presidential candidacy, while others in the hall passed out Hillary for President stickers. Iowa Congressman Bruce Braley says on Monday he heard testimony in a House hearing about the problems of the treatment of wounded soldiers at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. Braley, a Democrat from Waterloo, says the Washington facility appears to be a bureaucratic nightmare.
The things that really struck me about the testimony of these witnesses is that there was literally no help for navigating the complex system of the medical evaluation boards and physical evaluation boards, and many descriptions of inconsistent outcomes for service-related disabilities under the Department of Defense Disability Rating System and the Veterans Administration Disability Rating System.
Braley says he got no satisfaction after telling Army Surgeon General and former Walter Reed Commander General Kevin Kiley about a Waterloo company that used a lot of its personal resources to provide prosthetics to wounded soldiers. All the brass wanted to know was why the company wasn't a defense contractor. A Cedar Rapids businessman has launched his campaign to be the Republican who runs against Democrat Senator Tom Harkin in 2008. Steve Rocci says it's time for the Iowa GOP to take a different path when it chooses the person to face off against the five-term Democrat.
Since Roger Jepson's defeat in 1984, our Republican Party has nominated a sitting congressman in an attempt to unseat Senator Harkin, and every single time we've been defeated. There is no doubt in my mind that history will repeat itself if given the opportunity. So we need to make a change now.
Rocci describes himself as a fiscal and social conservative and rejects the idea that he's a long-shot candidate. The new governor's closer to his wish this week. The Iowa Senate approved a $1 a pack increase in the state tax on a pack of cigarettes. It was a lot like the famous analogy of herding cats, though. To make it not just a state money grab, Senator Larry McKibben, a Republican from Marshalltown, said the extra money should all go to the retailer selling the smokes and not to the state. Another Republican Senator, David Hartsuch of Bettendorf, who's a physician, offered other alternatives, making smokers get a $10 state permit to buy tobacco, denying those permits to anybody who's on welfare, and raising the legal age for possessing cigarettes from 18 to 21.
This will, I would say, drastically influence the consumption of tobacco in our state.
Senator Mark Zeman of Postville proposed an even higher increase, $5 a pack.
2 years ago, floating around this chamber was if we could raise the tax on cigarettes $1, 20% of the people would quit. Now, I'm not the brightest light bulb in the box. However, I know that if one box makes 20% quit, there's a pretty good chance $5 is going to make everybody quit.
The $1 increase will have to be endorsed by the Iowa House before the bill reaches Governor Culver's desk. A move is underway to end a big tax break that was once aimed at vehicles used by farmers. The license plates for a pickup truck in Iowa still cost only $65. Other owners of similar-sized vehicles pay about $400. John Putney, a Republican state senator from Gladbrook, says when it was mostly farmers driving the pickups, the very low tax rate made sense.
But as pickup trucks have become increasingly more popular with non-farmers, I think it's appropriate that we review the registration fees.
The Senate Transportation Committee voted to end the tax differential. The Iowa Farm Bureau opposes ending it, and that bill's future is uncertain. After more than an hour of heated debate, Republicans fell short in their bid to block pro-union legislation in the Senate. Senators voted 28-21 to allow unions representing government workers to collect a fee from non-union employees for certain services, like salary negotiations and legal representation. Senate Republican Leader Mary Lundby of Marion warned low-paid workers would be hurt the most.
I live with a factory worker who makes $30 an hour. His $60-plus union dues don't strap us in the slightest. But you think about my lunch ladies or my bus drivers at Marion High School, and you think about that $60 for them. That's gas in the car for the month. That's a week's worth of groceries if they've cut every coupon they can find.
But Senate Democratic Leader Mike Gronstall of Council Bluffs says those very workers will benefit from a union made stronger by everyone paying their so-called fair share.
To provide a little more strength to organized labor in this state that has fought for great things that we all benefit from and have benefited from all of our lives.
Gronstall added the state's right-to-work law has not exactly brought an avalanche of jobs to Iowa. Your home or work computer has programs that keep a running clock, put a time stamp on tasks you do and emails you send, and tells the computer when to switch that built-in clock to daylight savings time and back to standard time. That'll be upset this year when the date of daylight savings time is moved, a result of a congressional vote. Jeff Gullion is an instructor on computer information systems at Des Moines Area Community College.
The real problem's going to be is when, if my calendar adjusts for daylight savings time, but yours doesn't, then the inconvenience between those two connections is what I think is going to be a lot of it. We've been doing daylight savings times for a long, long time, so all computers are used to handling daylight savings time. All companies have been dealing with daylight savings time processing, so that's not new. But the switch to an earlier start and a later finish is the real difference.
The place he says it may cause trouble is in the office, where a computer server will handle traffic from many users in a number of offices. Something funny's going on here. New rules aimed at keeping illegal immigrants from collecting any benefits from citizens' tax dollars require showing a certified copy of a birth certificate to get care for a kid under Medicaid. But 5,000 families have dropped out of the Iowa program, and Department of Human Services Director Kevin Concannon says nearly all those 5,000 families are legal residents.
We talk to our offices, and they say these aren't Latino names or what have you. These are residents in these communities that are not enrolling because it's a hassle factor for them, and they say, well, maybe I can get by without having my kids, you know, health insured.
Concannon says for many, getting a birth certificate is too costly.
You know, I'm living a fairly lean income. Do I want to spend $100 getting two birth certificates for my... Now, we might say you should because it's important, but I can understand where a lot of people would say, you know, I'm going to spend that $100 getting my car fixed, getting a pair of tires.
Concannon estimates that only 100 of the 5,000 who failed to remain enrolled in Medicaid were illegal immigrants. He says the rest apparently don't have a birth certificate handy for themselves or their children.
For low-income people who move at a much higher rate than the rest of us, it's a much bigger challenge for them to be able to produce these documents.
There are currently 92,000 Iowa families enrolled in Medicaid. It was a bloody week on the crime beat. Monday, a man staggered to a gas station in Adair to tell the clerk he'd been stabbed. Police later arrested 42-year-old Jeffrey John Godron of Adair. On Tuesday, early in the morning, someone caught breaking into a gas station over in Wayne, Nebraska, tried to run down a cop there. Chief Lance Webster says his officer had to jump and roll away to keep from being hit.
We recovered the vehicle, and because of that, we were able to identify a possible suspect.
Randy Allen Floyd, 22 years old, from Texas. As far as we know, he has no connection here at all. He's a multiple convicted felon and is wanted on felony warrants from Texas.
Keep waiting for the Iowa connection. He may be accompanied by his wife, 22-year-old Nikita Floyd. The chief says they're traveling with a baby and a 5-year-old boy. The Iowa connection is, on Monday night, somebody sauntered into the Southside Walmart in Sioux City and walked out with a wad of cash, and they think it was the same suspect. Funny thing, too, it's looking like that one wasn't a holdup, like he may have just spied a deposit bag full of store receipts and made off with it. Thursday, Council Bluffs Police Chief Keith Malin says a report of a shooting led his officers to a dead man under the Interstate 480 bridge not far from the Missouri River.
The victim was there laying in the middle of a bike trail, which is down there, and it appears that we have a gunshot victim. We have yet to come up with a suspect.
The site is where the old Playland amusement park closed more than 30 years ago. Friday, they identified the victim as 38-year-old Robert Scott Hatcher of Council Bluffs, but as he said, still had to come up with a suspect. On Thursday afternoon, a woman says a man came to her door in Cedar Rapids drenched in blood and asked for a towel, saying someone had come to his home and cut his throat. Police found a woman had also been stabbed in the stomach. Friday afternoon, police issued a warrant for 36-year-old James Macklin, Jr., and say he should be considered dangerous. The record backs that up. Iowa Courts Online shows he has the proverbial record as long as your arm. And some of the deeds we report on are simply breathtaking. Bob Allen reports on a Southwest Iowa woman accused of not being a good mother at all.
An Oskaloosa woman has been charged with giving cocaine to her 18-month-old son. Mahaska County Sheriff's officers and Oskaloosa police arrested 21-year-old Alicia Boyd Reynolds on Wednesday. She is charged with giving the child cocaine in December of 2006 or January 2007 and failing to seek medical attention after the incident. Court documents indicate others were present when the cocaine was allegedly given to the child. If convicted of all charges, she faces up to 35 years in prison. The investigation continues and other charges may be filed. For Radio Iowa News, I'm Bob Allen.
Tuesday brought a big bad surprise for school kids and administrators in Northwest Iowa. Randy Renshaw reports.
Students in the Sergeant Bluff Luton School District didn't have to wait for the school bus this morning. There aren't any left after a fire destroyed the school's bus barn. Superintendent Rich Caldwell says that parents are being asked to carpool their kids for the daytime today to and from classes.
We're going to start calling our neighbor schools and see if they have spare buses that they're not using on a daily basis on their routes and see if we can borrow those.
A damage estimate has not been made. The fire marshal's office investigating. Randy Renshaw, Radio Iowa, Sergeant Bluff.
About 20 peace activists showed up to occupy the offices of Iowa U.S. Senator Charles Grassley in Des Moines and Cedar Rapids. Grassley was out holding town meetings to listen to other Iowans, while the members of Voices for Creative Nonviolence were hauled away. They say they'll be back every week for 2 months. Two key Democrats in the Iowa House are proposing new regulations for the state's livestock industry. The new rules would require livestock confinements to be built farther away from neighboring homes, churches, schools, and tourist attractions, including major bodies of water. It's been a big issue in the town called Clear Lake. Representative Jack Drake says the new rules would prohibit many farmers from having a livestock confinement on their own land.
When you take 400 acres and you can't even find a place hardly to put a confinement unit on, that's getting pretty restrictive.
The Republican from Lewis is a farmer and says he's among those.
I think it would be very detrimental long-term to the livestock industry.
Representative Stephen Olson, a Republican from DeWitt, says the rules would be a setback for the state's livestock operators.
To keep the renewable fuel industry in Iowa, we need to have a viable livestock industry, and hogs, cattle, the dairy industry, they're all part of the mix, and we have to be careful that we don't chase them out of the state as well.
Representative Marcella Frevert, a Democrat from Emmitsburg, says many Iowans are demanding change.
You know, there always are naysayers who say you're going to drive livestock production out of this state. I've survived the pseudo-rabies bill, and, you know, it didn't drive livestock production out of the state. So we hope that this will have bipartisan support, and time will tell.
Those who want to build closer than the new rules would allow could pay to have Iowa State University staffers conduct an odor assessment in hopes of obtaining a waiver. You can't win if you don't play and if you don't turn in the ticket. On Monday, Radio Iowa's Matt Kelly had a nudge for Powerball players.
The Iowa Lottery gives winners a year to claim their prizes, and the ticket sold at the MLK Hy-Vee store on March 11th last year is worth $200,000. The lottery's Tina Potthoff says it's possible this jackpot will just fade away.
This is a significant prize. $200,000 is a lot of money to go unclaimed, but we're hoping someone will step forward in the next 7 days.
Potthoff says it's rare for a winner to not step forward for a prize of this size, though in all of last year, $1.2 million did go unclaimed.
All unclaimed prize money in Iowa from the Iowa Lottery goes toward future prize pools for our players. So if no one claims this $200,000 ticket, that's what it'll be used for.
Since the one-year anniversary of the winning tickets drawing is next Sunday, Potthoff says they're giving the winner until the end of business next Monday, March 12th, to come forward. Radio Iowa, I'm Matt Kelly.
The Virtual Soldier Research Program, located at the University of Iowa, has won a $2.3 million contract from the U.S. Army to continue its research. The program's in the College of Engineering, where senior research scientist Tim Marler says they're trying to create a very high-fidelity, realistic, intelligent, virtual human as human can be, he says. So why a virtual person?
You can put this person in the tank and they can tell you, I can't reach this point, I'm uncomfortable, I can't lift the munitions, these kinds of things. Ultimately, to reduce the number of prototypes you have to build, the number of practice models of a tank or a vehicle, whatever it may be.
The humans in video games may look real, but he says they're just drawing from a database on how to react. Marler says they're making something much more realistic in its movement, and says the virtual human will also be able to give feedback.
In terms of physiology, heart rate, oxygen uptake, feedback in terms of muscles, what's the maximum strength you have, what is the force in your muscles, the stress in your muscles, these kinds of things. So it's a computer human that's much higher fidelity, a lot more information than what you would have, say, on a video game.
He says they've studied the way we move our bodies in the real world to model human movements, so the weapons and vehicle testing is even more realistic and can produce usable results without using up human subjects. So how much can you blame on your genes? University of Iowa research published in the American Journal of Medical Genetics may give insight into why some people suffer panic attacks or may be more susceptible to the addiction of smoking. Dr. Rob Philibert says as we learn more about how our brains work, we can understand why everyone's unique body chemistry affects their mental condition.
Behavioral illnesses result from interactions between our genes and the environment. And sometimes that isn't always what we would predict or what we would want. We have known for many years that people with panic disorder in the time period before they develop panic disorder have some physiological traits.
One more interesting part of both studies, both analyzed the makeup of brain cell DNA, not by delving into the skull, but by analyzing a drop of blood. He says being able to test a drop of blood and foretell a person's medical and psychological fate could lead to all kinds of abuse and prejudice if it ever became reality.
A man can use a hammer to build a house, to build a bridge, to build a shelter for the poor. At the same time, a man can use the same hammer to break a window. What guides us here is the common sense of the people and the legal structure of our society. And I have faith in Iowans, and I have faith in the people that they will use these type of technologies in constructive ways.
The reports on using blood DNA analysis on panic attacks and smoking are published in this week's online edition of the Genetic Journal. Fine, okay, you can drop out of school just as soon as you graduate. Iowa's top education official is urging lawmakers to pass a bill that would raise the high school dropout age from 16 to 18. Iowa Department of Education Director Judy Jeffries trying to get the House Education Committee to endorse the bill this week.
We believe this is really a message that needs to be sent to all of our students in Iowa that a high school diploma is the bare minimum that this state expects.
Some Republicans argue raising the dropout age will cause more discipline problems in high schools. They'll treat the body, but insurance companies often draw the line at mental health care. A bill in the State House would force insurance companies to cover a broader array of mental health services, including treatment for drug and alcohol addiction. Senator Herman Kornbach, a Democrat from Ames, says ensuring people can more easily get substance abuse treatment will save money in the long run.
Depression causes people to drink. People who drink too much lose their jobs, that makes them more depressed. Violence is visited upon their families. They get in trouble with the law. They go to jail. We wind up having huge social costs imposed upon our society and upon our taxpayers.
Under current state law, if a company has more than 50 workers on its payroll and offers health care benefits, the policies must cover treatment for biologically based mental illnesses. A bill that cleared an Iowa Senate committee Monday would require additional coverage for substance abuse treatment, eating disorders, and depression. Senator Dennis Black, a Democrat from Grinnell, is trying to outlaw novelty cigarette lighters, those goofy propane torches you see in cardboard displays at the checkout at gas stations and discount stores.
We lose 5 to 6 children a year to fires, and those who are playing with matches and cigarette lighters. This is bad business. We need to stop it. It will save lives.
Black says their different shapes and styles too often appeal to children, and he had a whole display of the lighters, working ones, on his desk at the State House. See the photo in this story when you read it at RadioIowa.com. A $250,000 federal grant for Newton will help the city plan for how to develop new jobs and resources. Leaders want to keep hundreds of workers from moving out after they were laid off following Whirlpool's buyout of Maytag and the impending closing of the flagship factory in Newton. A man killed in an Indiana plane crash this week had graduated from Cedar Rapids Jefferson High School in 1978. Relatives say 47-year-old Eric Johnson told them he wanted to earn a pilot's license so he could fly home with his daughter after he divorced his wife a year ago. On Monday, he and the child were in a small plane when it crashed into the home of his former mother-in-law. Johnson and the girl died in the crash, which is being investigated as a murder-suicide. The house is near the local airport. It's a church thing. Give out tinfoil pans and ask members to make a casserole and bring it in to help feed the needy. In this case, the need is large, and so is the scope of the hot dish handout. Workers at a large hospital and clinic medical center in Des Moines have produced 1,000 casseroles, which will be frozen and doled out by the Capital City branch of the Salvation Army. Workers say it'll help them feed 10,000 people. The day the music died in 1959 in Clear Lake, Iowa, there apparently was no gunfire, Bob Fisher reports.
Jay Richardson recently hired well-known University of Tennessee forensic anthropologist Dr. Bill Bass to examine the remains of his father, the Big Bopper, J.P. Richardson, to give an answer to the rumors that shots might have been fired on board the plane and that he survived the plane crash and died trying to get help. Bass took x-rays of the Bopper's body and found nothing to support any of those rumors or any type of foul play. Bass says Richardson suffered massive fractures and likely died immediately when the plane crashed in February 1959. That crash also killed Rockers Buddy Holly and Richie Valens, as well as Clear Lake pilot Roger Peterson. Bob Fisher, Radio Iowa, Mason City.
The director of the food program for the Des Moines schools spoke at a Senate hearing in Washington, D.C. this week on nutrition. Teresa Neese testified before the Senate Ag Committee on a program that provides fruits and veggies for kids to snack on.
Well, actually, as we first started the processes of incorporating fruits and vegetables, it became a very easy learning experience because it was a teachable moment to try something new, to actually look at things that were maybe common items such as fresh pears, kiwi, and to try that product in a classroom environment.
The biggest problem, she says, wasn't getting the kids to crunch on carrots, but just lining up daily deliveries of fruit and veggies to the schools. A school in northwest Iowa says it regrets the 25 gay rights activists were harassed Wednesday night in Sioux Center. The Equality Ride 2007 bus is making stops at 32 Christian colleges across the country and had a stopover Wednesday night. Kyle DeVries, spokesman for the touring group, says they watched pickup trucks circle their hotel and two young men mooned the group and found the next morning their bus had been sprayed with obscene graffiti. They went ahead and made their planned stop at Dort College.
The university president, when we arrived at Dort's campus yesterday, apologized sincerely for the actions taken by the community. They helped us clean off the bus. And overall, our visit with Dort College went amazingly well.
He says the administration was gracious to the visitors.
And we had a lot of great conversation with students, so we've been really appreciative of the way Dort College has handled things.
Dort is affiliated with the Christian Reformed Church of North America. Ken Borsma is vice president of student services at Dort.
We certainly do not support any actions such as this that are hateful toward any individual, and for something like this to happen in our town is is something that we regret and wish didn't happen. And we did express to the riders our deep regret that the incident occurred, and we did arrange for our maintenance staff to clean the bus in response.
The activists note you can still get kicked out of that school for being homosexual. Boersma says even if they continue to disagree, the school wanted to act with Christian grace toward its visitors. Iowa Army National Guard units from Dubuque, Esterville, Storm Lake, Algona, and Fort Dodge have gotten early warning they'll go on active duty sometime in the near future. They are artillery units, but Guard spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Greg Hapgood says this isn't a war zone mission, really. They're going to Kosovo.
One thing to note about the Kosovo province is not only the cultural tension and religious tension that exists there, but it has been, in the former Yugoslavia area, a training ground for terrorists as well. So if you can keep Kosovo stabilized and keep the rest of the former Yugoslavia stabilized, you may actually cut down on terrorist activity in the rest of the world. So that's why it's become a region of importance in the eyes of the United States and its allies.
The main unit from the Iowa Army National Guard is the 1st Battalion, 194th Field Artillery. He says Kosovo is a very different type of mission today.
It's really about ambassadorship. It's not about guns.
Hapgood says they'll do some training in Iowa before leaving and probably spend about 9 months in Kosovo. Matt Kelly's our theater man, the arts correspondent, and also loves to do those musical stories. From the old home filler-up and keep on a truckin' cafe, he tells us about a musical act with a style so unique they had to come up with a name for the genre.
Chip Davis is the front man for Mannheim Steamroller, a band he founded more than 20 years and 30 million albums ago. Davis, who lives in Omaha, coined Fresh Air to describe the band's sound.
The style of music of Fresh Air really is a combination of old and new technologies, everything from classical form to rock and roll instruments with synthesizers and bass and drums. But right alongside that, you'll also hear the harpsichord and recorders and ancient instruments.
It's not just for Christmas either. Mannheim Steamroller sold 23 million Christmas CDs, but Davis says he strives to make music people can use in their everyday lives. The Steamroller rolls into Des Moines Thursday. Radio Iowa, I'm Matt Kelly.
And that's the Radio Iowa podcast. I'm Stella Schaffer.